Since the end of the Cold War, many political theorists have assumed that as nations develop economically, they will also become more democratic, especially if a vibrant middle class takes root. The triumph of democracy, once limited to a tiny number of nations and now spread across the globe, has been considered largely inevitable. Yet in the past decade, democracy has seen unexpected reversals around the world. Nations once held up as model new democracies have curtailed social, economic, and political freedoms. In his new book, Democracy in Retreat, Joshua Kurlansing documents this trend, identifies surprising forces that threaten democracy, and warns that conventional wisdom has blinded world leaders to what he feels is a very real crisis. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Joshua Kurlansing to the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Again, the name of the book, Democracy in Retreat, The Revolt of the Middle Class and the Worldwide Decline of Representative Government. At what point did things start to change, do you believe?
Well, you can trace the trend back about 7 or 8 years to the early 2000s, because in the 90s and early 2000s, there was this period of real optimism that countries in Central and Eastern Europe that had turned democratic after the fall of the Berlin Wall, that countries in Africa that were just beginning to emerge as democracies were changing. And so there was a real, some in Asia, real optimistic period. You can look, you can't point to one event, but you can look to about 7 to 10 years ago as the time when the reversal began. And it's continued pretty consistently. I mean, there have been some ups and downs, but if you look at the rankings by Freedom House, which analyzes freedom around the world, then the number of countries considered free and the number of democracies has continued to fall over the last 7 years.
We, sort of at the beginning chapters of this democratization of the world, we were told that once the genie was let out of the bottle, it would never return. You couldn't put toothpaste back into the tube. How was
right.
that able to happen?
Right. That's a common belief. That's like Bill Clinton has told the Chinese government about 12, 13 years ago that once they began to open up economically, once they allowed the internet, it was like trying to stick Jell-O to the wall, you couldn't do it. So that was something of a mistaken belief, I think. First of all, there is a period early on in democracy where many of the things that we sort of associate with democracy that are good haven't yet come to pass. So you really have weak institutions, and they're vulnerable to leaders like Vladimir Putin or Hugo Chavez or a fellow that I studied quite closely in Thailand, Thaksin Shinawat, who do win elections and then use the period between the elections to basically destroy all the other checks and balances of democracy. So you're left with a kind of system in which you do have elections. Even the elections are not necessarily free and fair, but they're relatively free and fair, but you don't have any of the other independent institutions. So I call that an elected autocrat, but you could call it a lot of different names, a pseudo-democracy, et cetera. So it is possible to roll back. The second thing is that even though there's no evidence, or has never been any evidence, that in the early years of democracy, a country is going to grow more strongly. Democracy is generally better for people's well-being over the long term, but there's no evidence in the short term. In a lot of these countries in the 90s and 2000s, people associated political change with the idea that prosperity was coming. And when prosperity didn't come immediately, and you can see this clearly in many Eastern and Central European countries, in South Africa today, when prosperity and a drop in inequality didn't come, people blamed it on the political system, blamed it on the on democracy and blamed it on their leaders. And then the third thing is you simply have had in a number of countries in the 90s and 2000s very very poor leadership by the first generation of Democrats. I'm happy to talk about why that is. And then finally, you have the rest of the world less and less engaged. The U.S., other Western countries, big emerging democracies like South Africa, Brazil, India, less engaged with human rights and democracy around the world over the last few years.
So let us talk about that leadership. And with that, a follow-up to what you just talked about of this democratic rollback. But is it a rollback if it wasn't ever really firmly established?
Well, you know, some of the countries where I look at that have been rolled back, it was thought to be pretty firmly established. Thailand, for example, was considered a democratic success story in the 90s and early 2000s. I lived there at that time. They had multiple elections. The army had really seemed to return to the barracks. Most Thai people and most foreigners who looked at Thailand at that time told you with a good deal of confidence that Thailand was not going to revert to any sort of pseudo-authoritarian rule, and that is what happened. You could say the same thing about a number of other places. There was a belief, and you can go back and look at the literature, that despite his many, many flaws, that Russia had turned a corner in the 90s and that there was considerable freedoms under Yeltsin, and that it was not going to return to an authoritarian system, and obviously that was wrong as well. There are other countries, true, that where democracy's roots were shallower, and so the reversals, and I'm talking about places like Pakistan or Nigeria, were less surprising perhaps. But there are quite a number of places, and in fact, I think you can even say, we're not talking about a complete reversal, but there are countries now, particularly in the wake of the serious economic problems in Europe, that I think you have to doubt, if not democracy, just the long-term viability of their political system, including places like Greece and Italy, which have been democracies for a long, long time.
So let us get back to the issue of leadership. What does it take in leadership to get these countries to that point and also to sustain it?
Well, I think if you look at the places that have been successful in transition, places like Taiwan and South Korea, Indonesia and South Africa at first, you see that people who grew up, they cut their political teeth as leaders of opposition movements, like Nelson Mandela is a perfect example, but you could point to other similar figures in South Korea, Taiwan, or Indonesia. When a transition ultimately happened, they basically took the high road, which is not easy to take. But they recognized that they were going to need to continue to cooperate with their former oppressors. They're probably, in many cases, going to need their former oppressors because they often controlled capital, wealth, and business. That's clearly true in South Africa. That they were going to have to work out some sort of arrangement that allowed for some kind of justice so that the majority of the population felt like the dictatorial era had been dealt with somewhat, but which didn't drive basically middle class and elite out of the country. Mandela is famous for that. I mean, we've seen this movie where he embraces the white, essentially all-white rugby team. But leaders in places like Taiwan, South Korea, and Indonesia have done that as well. And that's a tricky balance to find because you're going to have a lot of people who've been your supporters for a long time crying for the heads of people who were in the former dictatorship. And they're not going to be happy when you turn around and don't necessarily take that. But that's one. And then the second is we've seen in a lot of these young democracies, like Kenya is a good example. Kenya just had an election that the initial leaders, that's the good that I'm saying, the bad. The initial leaders who had come from opposition movements, those opposition movements had become so ossified and almost autocratic within themselves that when they became, when they came into government, it was hard for them to shake that autocratic structure. In other words, the opposition movement within itself had become autocratic in order to survive, and it was hard to get out of that mindset once they were in power.
Where do you think we as Americans in this government are in recognizing the trends that you are talking about? Is it taken seriously, or do they consider it just a blip and something that will reverse itself naturally?
You mean by we as Americans, do you mean the Barack Obama administration or just Americans in general? Or?
Well, I think I do mean, I mean, the government as a whole. This administration and the government of how we look at this time period and what's happening.
No, I don't think it's that well recognized. I mean, I think that we always have, not just the government, but generally in the U.S., a kind of optimism, which is good. It's a good thing in general. We have an optimism about the general appeal of democracy, and which is also good because I do think that in the right circumstances, democracy is appealing to all people. And we have a general optimism that democracy will ultimately triumph, which is to some extent based on history like the Second World War and the Cold War. So we tend to overlook blips. And again, I'm not saying that there's less democracy in the world now than there was, for example, in 1912 or 1933, but just that the past 10 years have been extremely worrisome. In the Obama administration, I think, and in most other Western countries, democracy promotion has definitely taken a backseat in terms of focus and money spent for a number of reasons. One, it was tainted somewhat by the Bush administration's linking of democracy promotion to war, which was a mistake. Second, Obama's just got so many things on his plate domestically that he doesn't have much time for any foreign affairs, and those that and democracy promotion is sort of a squishy area that would come lower down on the list anyway, even in the best of times. And the third is that our natural partners in democracy promotion now would be these big emerging democracies like Brazil, India, Indonesia, et cetera, who have been pretty successful long-standing democracies themselves, and they don't show a lot of interest in democracy promotion either. So all those things together, I think you don't see a lot of the interest in democracy promotion in Washington that you did in the 90s, for example.
I do think it's safe to say, Joshua, as you no doubt would agree, and I think, as would I, that there are people listening to this right now and listening to us talk about democracy across the world. And of course, by comparison, in many ways, America will win. But there are people who are listening to us and saying, yeah, but, you know, we're not doing so great in democracy in this country in many regards.
Well, I don't. It's not a zero-sum game, first of all. I don't think that if other countries, developing countries' democracies, fail, that the U.S. loses, or if they succeed, the U.S. wins. Secondly, I mean, most of these countries actually, I think, their democratic models are quite different from the U.S. You're talking mostly about parliamentary systems anyway, and I think that in an era where we don't have a clear ideological opponent, like in the Cold War, it's not that the United States is being held up as an example in a lot of these countries anyway, but certainly I agree with you that America's governance right now is a significant problem. And I think that in some of the places I cited, in Europe, for example, in Southern Europe, there, which are also long-standing democracies, their governance problems, which are sort of steps ahead of where we are right now, have become so bad that I think you do see anti-democratic stirrings, far-right parties in Greece that are not so far from almost a fascist party. You know, Italy just had an election in which was just completely, they elected a comedian. They gave a lot of votes to Berlusconi, who is like a joke to anyone outside Italy. So I don't think we're at that point yet in the U.S., but I also don't think the U.S. model is necessarily the model being looked to anymore anyway.
The name of the book, Democracy in Retreat, The Revolt of the Middle Class and the Worldwide Decline of Representative Government. It is published by Yale. Joshua Karlancic is a fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, where he studies Southeast Asia and democratization, as well as global views on human rights and democracy. Joshua, great pleasure. Thank you very much for sharing with us this morning.
All right. Thanks so much for having me.
I appreciate it. Again, the name of the book is Democracy in Retreat. It's published by Yale. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.